Firstly, I want to ask about direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising, and where do you stand in terms of the policy side of the issue, also the marketing side, and whether you think, with the bill being ratified this year, there might be a chance for it to be reassessed?
First of all, it's a caucus decision for us still to make and to have to look at what's being proposed in the bill and for us to reach a caucus policy decision on that. Secondly, if we look back through some of the history with DTCA, direct-to-consumer advertising, and against that backdrop of us and the US being the only two countries in the world that allow drug companies to directly advertise straight to consumers, a couple of things in the background that brings us here. First of all, in 2019, Consumer New Zealand wrote to the Minister of Health with a survey showing that the majority of people they'd surveyed wanted direct-to-consumer advertising banned. Only 15 wanted DTCA to continue, and only 3% thought the advertising was very trustworthy. If we go back beyond that, in 2006, the Ministry of Health sought submissions on DTCA. 8 professors of general practice in New Zealand submitted to the Select Committee and to the Ministry recommending that DTCA be banned. Some of the countries that have banned DTCA, like EU and Canada, have had those bans challenged in the courts and they've been turned down, so DTCA is still banned in those countries. British Medical Journal has had a number of articles. Gilbody in 2004 found no evidence of any direct clinical benefit to direct-to-consumer advertising, and the American Medical Association has repeatedly called for a ban on advertising in the US. The issue here is several-fold. First of all, the pharmaceuticals make the argument that they're providing information to consumers. The medical fraternity would say that information is misleading, and in fact that all it does is put pressure on prescribers to prescribe in a way that may not be helpful. And the example being given of where consumer advertising from pharmaceuticals directly to the public here in New Zealand has been misleading, a couple of examples. In 2003, Reductyl, which was a weight loss preparation, was heavily marketed directly to consumers, and then that had to be withdrawn for severe side effects eventually. In 2003, of course, the classical case of Vioxx, which is an anti-inflammatory, that was heavily direct-to-consumer marketed to New Zealanders, and of course then had to be withdrawn due to premature deaths. There's also been some evidence around equity that direct-to-consumer advertising may disproportionately affect the most vulnerable. Some papers out of Dunedin, and I'll just quote from one conclusion, taken together, the findings suggest individuals, especially those who are at risk, i.e. those with poorer self-reported health status, older, less educated, lower income and ethnic minorities, may be more vulnerable to drug advertising and may make uninformed decisions accordingly. BMJ article, again, looking at the inappropriateness or the poor decision-making that can arise from direct-to-consumer advertising. I've already mentioned that there's a number of articles in the British Medical Journal looking at this. So there's a tension there between drug companies wanting to advertise direct-to-consumers and medical fraternity generally saying that the advertising isn't useful and that sometimes it can be misleading. Now, the pharmaceutical companies would say they now pass their advertising through an independent body to make sure that it does have some degree of fidelity and is representative of what they're wanting to market. But even so, I asked DHBs and did ask for a number of years through annual review, were they supportive of direct-to-consumer advertising? And those who were prepared to take a position generally said no. So that the sort of tensions are around the sort of advertising that will need to be explored.
In your past experience as a GP, people are coming in like with queries and like with a specific prescription in mind, what has that advice been around, like, one-on-one?
They come in either with an image or photograph of what they've seen on television or in a magazine, if you like, and they say, oh, this sounds like me. This is probably what I should try. And, of course, the advertising many times can be very broad. It's sort of like if you breathe oxygen, you need this. And so everyone or a large number of people can see themselves in the advertising. That's my observation of advertising in other jurisdictions as well. And so they have a high set of expectations. And sometimes it can be very challenging for a GP. It depends somewhat on their relationship with the patient, whether they're able to explain why or why not this particular preparation may be suitable for them. And there can be some disappointment when they've prepared themselves, had the expectation coming into the consultation that what they saw on the television describes them and this is their solution. And so there can be a sense of disappointment. And that's a challenge for GPs. No one likes to disappoint a patient and say, look, actually, there are other alternatives. that may be more suited to you, because when we look at your particular case, there are some reasons why this preparation that you've been reading about may not be suitable. So yes, it does provide a challenge and can elevate expectations beyond what they should be.
What possible alternatives should be explored for public awareness of medicine access and information, should a ban of DTCA occur?
This is a policy position that the caucus will need to establish, so I'm not able to give a position here now. How we transfer information about pharmaceuticals to the public, there are a number of alternatives. Independent bodies, instead of a push, may well be a pull. So patients might go looking rather than being pushed it through advertising on television. And may be able to go to, for example, a reputable website and be able to find answers to their questions. But I think a large part of that responsibility relies on primary care and that relationship between primary care and the pharmaceuticals. And with primary care is sort of the medical home and the gateway to prescribing, and that trusted source that can analyse all the information out there and synthesise it down to, I think these are the options most suitable to this particular patient. That comes down to the skills and experience that sit with GPs and other primary care providers, and how they then gather that information around their prescribing habits and information that needs to be passed on to patients around what they're being given. That's where the information pathway, I think, could be better expanded.